Now see what I've fixed, said Thad. Let's see, here are 7 varieties of soup. This one's that red, papery, ruffly kind of seaweed, and this one's more like pea soup, and this one's eelgrass soup. It's all slimy like okra. And these are mixed-up seaweeds for vegetable soup, and this isn't soup, it's supposed to be sauerkraut. Kenny thrust a can under Betsy's nose. Have some fish chowder? Pew, cried Betsy, you might have found a fresher fish. It's only a little dead, Thad said, still firm. But we do have some live soup. The clam chowder, it's got 2 live clams in it, and here's worm spaghetti, fresh and wiggling, and our mushroom soup's real mushrooms. Toadstools, you mean, chortled Kenny, the choicest destroying angels. Marcy knelt over a can. Here's another live soup, waterbug soup. Betsy examined the waterbug soup, too. What else do you have in that can besides water bugs? Those bugs are zooming up and down like crazy, not just buzzing around on the surface. Water bugs always do that in a small space, said Thad. You forgot turtle soup, Betsy said. Why didn't you put myrtle in a can? You don't make soup out of pets, Thad said. Hey, you haven't looked at my vegetable section yet, said Kenny, and now he showed off the plates of seaweed lettuce and chicory and spinach. The heaps of acorns, green and brown, for green and ripe olives, the salads of oak leaves and maple leaves, and the snake grass celery.
The author of those recipes is Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program on the process of writing creatively. Conducting the program is children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
I once visited a third cousin of mine that I'd never met before and found that she had a printing press in her living room and that her hobby was printing little books. She told me that children's books and cookbooks will always sell. I'm not absolutely sure about children's books, but I am sure about cookbooks. I looked up cookbooks in books in print to see just how many there were available and discovered that there were 12 pages. At about 150 titles a page, that makes about 1,800 cookbooks. And that was 1970, so there'll probably be about another 300 printed this year. I noticed that there were 49 cookbooks alone that were listed under children's cookbooks, and they had such names as Around the World Cookbook for Young People, How to Be Mother's Helper, Now We're Cookin', Barbie's Easy as Pie Cookbook, Kids in the Kitchen Cookbook, The Dish Ran Away with the Spoon, and Learning Science Through Cooking. There were all sorts of other cookbooks. Every country from Albania to Zanzibar had its cookbooks, and every type of cookbook, yoga and yogurt cookbooks, porcupines and pickles. I noticed that there were flower cookbooks. There were 6 volumes listed, one of them called Treasury of Rose Arrangements and Recipes, so that the title of Please Don't Eat the Daisies might not be such a remarkable title after all. There were marine cookbooks that tell you how to cook on a ship, and one of those was called Galley Slave Cookbook. There are also some cookbooks I know about that aren't in print. My father had one that was a famine cookbook from the Middle Ages, which told you how to make grass soup, prepare tree bark and seaweed and things of that sort in times of famine. And when I was in high school, we had a Latin cookbook, and we translated it and cooked some of the recipes out of it. I remember that I cooked quinces in honey. Have you ever discovered that many cookbooks make very good reading? Some authors lace their recipes with interesting stories and other sorts of information, and you can learn a lot of interesting things by reading a cookbook. For instance, the standby of many a kitchen, and it may be in your own kitchen, is The Joy of Cooking, which many people call Irma, because Irma Rombauer is the principal author. In leafing through The Joy of Cooking, you can discover this. A young turkey has black feet, a 3-year-old turkey has pink feet, and an old turkey has gray feet. The only problem there is that most of us buy turkeys in the supermarket, and then we can't tell at a glance whether we're getting a young turkey or a 3-year-old or an old turkey. She also puts in her opinions about various things. For instance, she has a hard-cooked egg cookies recipe. And starting that off, she says, "I add this recipe to my book in self-defense. I am tired of hearing from friends who felt injured when they failed to find it in an earlier edition. These cookies seem to have a nostalgic hold that does not lessen with the years. Therefore, to keep my hold on my friends, I am complying with their request to have this rule included." And I read the recipe and discovers that it includes 4 hard-boiled eggs that have been put through a ricer and added to the batter. But you can tell by the tone of Irma's comments that she is not at all sure that she cares for hard-cooked egg cookies. Our kids cook one meal a week at our house, and Demi goes to the library and brings home exotic cookbooks, African cookery and Yugoslavian cookery. And if you think it's hard to keep an ordinary library book clean, try to keep one clean that's sitting out there in the kitchen while somebody is making up a Hawaiian luau. Jill, on the other hand, has discovered Peg Bracken's I Hate to Cook book, and this is just the opposite from Irma Rombauer's Joy of Cooking. Peg Bracken wants something that's tried and true and easy and to get out of the kitchen fast. She says that she doesn't like the big fat cookbooks that tell you everything about everything. For one thing, they contain too many recipes. Just look at all the things you can do with a chop and aren't about to. What you want is just one little old dependable thing you can do with a chop besides broil it, and that's all. And she also says somewhere, "These recipes have not been tested by experts. That is why they are so valuable. Experts in their sunny, spotless test kitchens can make anything taste good, but even we can make these taste good." And in another spot, discussing little kids' parties, menu number 1, she says, "Until someone perfects a bubblegum popsicle peanut butter casserole that really sings, the old tuna mushroom standby does remarkably well." One other thing she includes is describing a child that she knew once who liked cracker sandwiches. You would put 2 saltines between 2 slices of bread. And she says, each one to his own taste. Most of the cookbooks that I've noticed seem to be written specifically toward women. The children's cookbooks, incidentally, don't seem to single out the girls on the whole. They seem to be for girls and boys. And yet, many men cook, and many men enjoy cooking, and many men have written cookbooks. One of our absolutely favorite books is almost a Bible to us. It's a cookbook that's more than a cookbook. It's a way of life, and it's called Stalking the Wild Asparagus by Yule Gibbons. All his chapters tell about one particular wild food, how to find it, and recipes to prepare it. And we've gone out into the woods, spring, summer, fall, and the fields and the swamps and the roadsides, and we have prepared cattails and dandelions and daylilies and milkweed and all sorts of other goodies. Yule Gibbons often tells a personal story along with his recipes and his discussion of the wild food. Here's where he tells about wild asparagus. "When I was about 12 years old, we lived near the Rio Grande in New Mexico. At that age, I didn't mind school so badly when winter weather made it disagreeable to be outdoors. But when the first warm days of spring arrived, I only existed through the 5 school days each week in order to really live on Saturdays. I would be off early every Saturday morning to the river, the woods, or the surrounding hills to see what nature was doing about bringing the earth back to life and to revel in all the changes that had taken place since the week before. One such bright Saturday in spring, I was walking along the bank of an irrigation ditch, headed for a reservoir where I hoped to catch some fish. Happening to look down, I spied a clump of asparagus growing on the ditch bank with a half a dozen fat little spears that were just the right size to be at their best. The idea of reaping where I did not sow has fascinated me all my life. I took out my pocket knife, cut the tender tips, and dropped them into the pail in which I had intended to carry home any fish I might catch. Even while I was cutting this cluster, I saw another with several more perfect little sprouts." And so at this point, he discovers many more, and that each one of these clumps has old, dry asparagus stalks standing above it. "Despite my impatience to be off seeking more of these tender spears, I sat down on the ditch bank, and for 5 minutes I did nothing but just look at one old dry asparagus stalk. It looked very much like the dead weeds and plants that surrounded it, and yet there were differences. The old asparagus plant stood about 3 feet high and had a central stem or trunk about a half inch in diameter. And he continues to give a very minute description of the wild asparagus plant. And once he had thoroughly digested what it looked like, he looked around him and discovered that he had missed wild asparagus all over. And from then on, his family ate wild asparagus daily. All these cookbooks I've been mentioning are authentic cookbooks. They really tell you how to cook something. There's another kind, cookbooks for fun, spoofs on cookbooks, satire on cookbooks. Thad and Betsy and Marcy and Kenny, at the start of this program, could have made a recipe book for their seaweed soups and clam chowders and acorn olives. Actually, it's already been done. It's called Mud Pies and Other Recipes by Marjorie Winslow. Here are a few choice recipes from her book. Sawdust cake. Mix a little of the clay found along riverbanks with sawdust and pack into a square cake pan. Sprinkle with water from a sprinkling can. Bake it in the sun until hard, then turn out of the pan and frost with moss. Here's pine needle upside down cake. Using the square cake pan, cover the bottom with a layer of pine needles. Then mix moist earth from the foot of a pine tree with pine needles and pack the mixture tightly into the pan on top of the layer of pine needles. Place in a hot sun to bake, turning upside down to unmold. A sandbox sandwich is made in this way. Mix sand with water in a pail. Spread a thin layer of this mixture on an English ivy leaf. Top with another ivy leaf and serve. And silky spaghetti, as you may guess, is made out of corn silk. Maybe you've run across the Vampire Cookbook. Ghoulish Recipes for Monster Appetites by Kilmore Daily. Some of the choice recipes are tenderloin of lizard stuffed with mice teeth, bat a la king, candied crocodile eyes. Here's one for barbecued bat. There is first a list of ingredients and then follows. Sprinkle each bat with 1 teaspoon lizard dust. Place bat's skin side up on a rack about 6 inches from the heat. Throw together shark oil, vampire blood, pariah dust, sweet amoeba, red cells, and yellow germs to make a sauce. Cook slowly until tender. Turn and brush with sauce frequently. Allow 1 hour to cook. When bat legs are tender when tested with a fork, bat is ready. Yield enough to kill 8. These remind me of the 3 witches in Shakespeare's Macbeth. They are stirring up a kettle of riches brew, and their chanting amounts to a recipe. I'd like you to hear the way the English kids recite it on the Carl Orff record, Music for Children.
Double, double, toil and trouble. About the cauldron go, in the poison entrails through. True, that under the cold stone, days and nights at 31 swirled a venom sleeping lot, while thou burst in the charred pot. Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
Fillet of a fenny snake, in the cauldron boil and bake.
Eye of newt and toe of frog,
wool of bat,
a tongue of dog,
adder's fork and blindworm sting,
lizard's leg
and howlet's wing.
For the charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth, boil and bubble.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
Other books give recipes in that fashion. Any one of Wilbur's dinners, as described in Charlotte's Web, could come from a book called The Well-Fed Porker. It was a delicious meal. Skim milk, wheat middlings, leftover pancakes, half a donut, the rind of a summer squash, 2 pieces of stale toast, 1/3 of a ginger snap, a fish tail, 1 orange peel, several noodles from a noodle soup, the scum off a cup of cocoa, an ancient jelly roll, a strip of paper from the lining of the garbage pail, and a spoonful of raspberry jello. Today, let's try writing recipe books. It could be a recipe that you know by heart, a real recipe, one that you like to cook, and you could tell how you came to know it and any stories connected with it. Or your recipes could be spoofs like the Mud Pie Cookbook and the Vampire Cookbook. You could write from a particular point of view, add incidents and stories and chatty bits to go along with your recipes. The Crocodile Cookbook, the Nanny Goat Cookbook for feeding young kids. You might try a children's literature cookbook. Harper's publishers say that they still get soggy gingerbread sent in by children who have made gingerbread out of Laura Ingalls Wilder's books. But lots of food in lots of books could be compiled in a recipe book. Alice in Wonderland's Mad Tea Party Tea, Charlotte's Centipede Cider, for instance, and I mentioned Wilbur's Stew. It's a little gruesome, but how about Mrs. McGregor's Rabbit Pie or the Gingerbread Boy's Gingerbread Recipe? You might want to try something even more imaginative. How about a Magic Spells recipe book and what spell this particular recipe will cause? How about a peace recipe book? What is the recipe for getting peace on this earth? What's a love recipe book? We could have an ecology recipe book. Or we could take a world recipe book. It could start, take one small brown planet, punch it in several places, fill the punches with water, and it could end up, place 93 million miles from the sun and rotate every 24 hours.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your recipes to Jacqueline Jackson. And teachers, if you'd like information about an adult writing class with Jacqueline Jackson next fall semester, let her know that too. Send your writings and notes to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.